future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the bullpen here with the producers of ESPN Radio. I am Brian McDonald, sacked by BMAC on the X. I am Jay Chevy, our man Josh behind the glass, but it is not Sean. It is not Andrew Carlson. It is Joe George. He can be found on the X at Joe George Radio with me today. Yes, on are you still calling it Twitter?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
When I go on my computer, it's twitter.com, and then it redirects me.
See, maybe this is something that I'm uniquely dealing with. Not uniquely, but at least compared to some of the other people here at the station. Because I'm about to turn 40 in a couple weeks. So
old man, BMAC.
Well, that's exactly right. Like, I don't want to, like, cling to the old name and be viewed like, oh, it's the old man. He can't embrace the new thing. That's the X. Exactly. So I'm kind of, like, testing the waters to try to see if people younger than me are willing to still call it Twitter, or if I need to be hip and call it the X. So
no, I'm calling it Twitter,
Josh, what are you calling it these days?
It's still Twitter for me.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
If Josh, who's in his 20s, is still calling it Twitter, then I feel okay still calling it Twitter. All right, enough of that. We're going to talk Astros right here. We'll get into the Texans and their offensive line panic later in the show. And, of course, our groundbreaking, award-winning, sports landscape-changing segment, Mount Rushmore Plus One, will be coming up in hour number two at 1:30. Joe George making his Mount Rushmore Plus One debut. Also at 1 o'clock in the second hour, we're going to have our man, Josh Beard, the new 12 to 3 host here on ESPN 97.5. He's going to be joining us to talk fantasy football, so don't miss either of those segments. And if you have any thoughts on what we talk about with the Astros and the Texans, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But as I mentioned, we're going to start here with the Astros. And I wasn't really expecting to come in and talk about last night's game specifically, because, you know, just kind of looking ahead of it, like just measuring the teams on paper. I mean, the Yankees were calling up their prospects. Obviously, they've had a really rough run of it over the second half of the season. And the Verlander seemingly turned around. He had a couple good starts in a row after that five-run game against Miami. And the Astros offense had been clicking. And all of a sudden, things fall apart. So Verlander allows 6 earned runs, including 4, you know, with 4 home runs in there. And This Yankees lineup, which included guys like Jason Dominguez, hitting a home run off of Justin Verlander, the very first pitch that he saw of his entire career. I don't know if that introduced any level of panic to you, Joe, but I was starting to feel like, it feels like weekly we're having to ask, like, which Astros pitcher are you confident in? Verlander was firmly in the confident area, but now this, I'm a little bit shaken.
Yeah, last night was not enjoyable to watch. Watching Stanton and Judge go deep to the train tracks was not enjoyable at all. And yeah, JV just, it's weird because he's so confident.
Like, this Yankees line, yeah, Verlander's going to dominate him.
He was like, I figured stuff out. It's the best I've ever felt this season. Like, everything is like being back with the Astros was like going great. And then last night, it's just, he goes full Justin Verlander. Like, we know he is susceptible to like the
he was
home
last
run.
Year too, even.
And like, but a lot of times, like, he would give up one.
Yeah, and they'd be solo shots.
Exactly. Yeah. And then last night, he just gave up a lot of solo shots and a lot of home runs. And, like, it was a brutal start for him. And it's weird because, like, in a normal Astros season, I feel like, oh, it's not a big deal. Like, it is what it is. But with the way Javier and some of these other guys have been pitching, like, you need Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez to be awesome. And last night, he's not. It didn't bother me too much during the game. I was like, it's just one start. But then watching the Rangers and the Mariners lose, and
such a missed opportunity.
You could have been in first place last night. It's like, JV, like, what are we doing here, man?
Doesn't it feel like we already, like, if the Astros are ever the last team to play between the Mariners and Rangers today, can't we just look at whatever happened to them and just assume the same thing will happen? It feels like if they all win, if the Mariners and Rangers both win, the Astros win. If the Mariners and Rangers both lose, the Astros lose. It feels like these teams are going to stay, like, one game apart and going into that final 10-game stretch where they all play each other. But with Verlander, like, look, I mentioned that he had that five runs allowed against Miami a few weeks ago, and then he had back-to-back good starts. And I'm starting to wonder, after what happened to him last night against the Yankees, a lineup that hasn't been good this year, and we're starting a couple rookies in that lineup, was, because remember, his last start before this Yankee series was against the Tigers, and the Tigers are not a good team, and yeah. they got a couple of nice young players, but they're not a good team. They're not a playoff team. Was that maybe a little false confidence, a little fool's gold, thinking that Verlander had turned this corner when the opponent was the Tigers?
I think it's on the table. I think we'll learn a lot after his next start, which I don't even know. I think, well, he'll miss
the Rangers, because Rangers are what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah, so he'll miss the Rangers. So Justin Verlander, so his next start's probably going to be Friday.
Well, actually, you know what? No, if they keep him on every five days, he'll get the finale of the Rangers.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So he would get
the
finale.
Assuming they keep him on the regular 5 days rest.
And I think that was supposed to be Scherzer, but now he's hurt.
Man, that would have been awesome.
So, like, I think there's a small chance we could get JV Scherzer, because Scherzer pitched yesterday as well. That would be
a diva matchup.
A diva match. A fight of the ages. One diva versus another.
So, God, that is the worst WrestleMania headline. The only way they could save that main event is if they put it inside a – and sorry, Josh, we're going to talk wrestling here for a second. But the only way they could save that is that they put it inside a Punjabi prison cell.
Mm.
Yeah.
Fair.
All right. So, as bad as and disappointing as Verlander was, we got to talk about the offense as well. Not only because they got four hit, but because of who the opponent was. I mean – Carlos Rodon has had some great seasons with the White Sox and the Giants, but that was not the Carlos Rodon who had been on the mound this season. He started the year hurt, so he's only made eight starts. And his eight starts before last night, or actually I think last night was his eighth start, but either way, Rodon was 1-4 with a 579 ERA, and you can't even say it was unlucky because his FIP was even higher at 679. Well, and he was allowing opposing hitters an 820 OPS over his eight starts before last night, and then he four hits the Astros, who had been bashing teams to the tune of 13 runs, 17 runs. There's been an old joke for years with the Astros when some unheralded rookie comes up. It's like, well, if the Astros have never seen him, they're going to play down the competition. Yep. But I don't know what to make of the inconsistency with this Astros lineup.
Yeah, it's so weird because it's like yesterday we started the Killer Bees with is the Astros lineup good enough to carry them to the World Series? And then we talked about this Martin Maldonado quote that he gave to the beat reporters, where Maldi said this lineup reminds him of 2019. And it's like, well, in the middle of the order, it's better than 2019.
Yeah.
Like the way Tucker and Alvarez are playing, the way Bregman and Altuve are going, like, obviously Altuve gets dinged up last night, but, like, you know, they're playing, like, the middle, like, 1-5 is so good for the Astros. And this is where, like, I really don't like being the lineup guy, Brian. I really don't.
Who should hit where?
But, like, Chaz McCormick crushes lefties. He's not in the lineup. And, like, I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand why Chaz McCormick.
I feel like you're going to lose hair trying to figure out Dusty's reasons to.
I'm still waiting for Doc Linville to call me because, like, I'm already going bald as hell. But, like, it's at this point, like, it's infuriating that they face a pitcher who's having a bad season. And after dominating the Red Sox, they just fall flat. And, like, and they better not fall tonight. They're facing Severino tonight. His ERA is above.
He's been one of the worst pitchers in all of baseball.
And I think he's dominated. Didn't he dominate the Astros? Or, like, he had a very good outing.
I'm blanking on that four-game series in New York a few weeks ago.
Like, you got to get to him tonight. Like, you got to win this game tonight. You got to win this series. Finish it up on Sunday Night Baseball. Because, like, you are clearly a superior team versus the Yankees. And, like, you have to win these games. Like, last night they had to find a way. Whatever went wrong with the offense, it's like they got to figure it out and be more consistent, because when you have all these guys going 0-3 like Bregman, and then pretty much everyone else went like 1-4. I think Alvarez only had one official at bat last night. He went
I think you're right.
But, like, the offense just hasn't been consistent enough. It's like they have these crazy peaks, and then these valleys are so low. Like, it's this ultimate roller coaster with the Astros offense right now.
So you said you don't want to be a lineup guy, but are you – I know you were unhappy with the use of Chaz, but, I mean, where are you with the lineup overall? I know Dusty plays with it constantly. Like, Brantley was sitting yesterday. We've talked all season about how Diaz is and isn't used. He doesn't play against the lefty. Basically never does. I mean, what would your ideal lineup even be at this point? Or what – maybe let me shorten the question. We don't have to go 1-9. Here's the guys that go in order. But, like, what improvements or changes would you make to the lineup to make it more ideal?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a perfect world, like, I'm over the Maldi conversation. Like, Maldi's going to catch for
personal catcher Verlander, Farmer, and that'd be it.
And then Diaz needs to get the other games.
Yeah,
now,
I
if
agree.
The lefties on the mound in those other games, you can sell me on Martin Maldonado. He smashes lefties.
Yeah,
so like
he has, and he's had a nice little streak over the last few weeks.
So like that, you can sell me on that. Now with Farmer, I still would like to see it. My biggest dusty pet peeve from this season is when they stopped having Diaz catch Hunter Brown, and Dusty's excuse was, well, what if he gets hurt? But then, like, that doesn't apply to Framber Valdez or Justin Verlander. Like, what if Maldi gets hurt? At this point, like, I feel like if Maldi got hurt, Caesar Salad is going to end up catching instead of...
Dude's hitting under 200 at AAA. He's not a major league player.
No, but, like, it just... Doesn't it feel like that's what would happen, though? Like,
probably.
If Maldi got hurt, like Salazar would come up and he'd be the Framber guy. So I want to see those guys. I want to see, you know, Brantley, Alvarez versus righties. And then when lefties are going, like, I like Chaz and Jake in the lineup. Like, I do. Like, it was nice to see Dubon not out there in center field last night. And obviously, he came in. You know,
if you're playing Chaz and Jake, though, you're
so Yordan's your DH.
Yeah, Yordan's the DH. So you're sacrificing either Brantley or Diaz.
Oh, well, it's almost like I'd like to see Diaz has had some success recently versus lefties. Like, I don't get why he's not playing more.
Especially since this was something I know the bench talked about and that Granato got fired up about. Like when Dusty made these comments about how he can't hit lefties, it was like a 50 at bat sample size.
Exactly.
In a full major league season, guys can get over 600 at bats, and we're basing, what he's going to be for his entire career. Like he just can't hit lefties off of 50 at bats.
Yeah, and that, it's just like, so he should be playing more. Like in a perfect world, he's your DH and Yordan's in left or some combination. Like I think Jose Abreu has looked so much better since the IL stint. Like his bat speed looks so much better. So like I'm good with him being in the lineup. So like it's more about like it's actually really like, it's just Chaz. Like it just he should be in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
Like
he should
get one day off a week. And to me, like that should be it. And like that's the end of the story. But and like it's not why they lost last night, because your big guns didn't come through when you needed them to. But like it just doesn't help when the bottom at one point in your lineup you're going Jake Myers, Martin Maldonado, and then Jose Altuve gets hurt, so it's Dubon. Like, that's three outs.
Yeah, no.
I've
said this before on the show, but at times when we see that lineup come out and it's, you know, Maldi, Jake, and Dubon or something like that, or Jolks when he was here, it almost felt like a flashback. And I know you weren't here in Houston yet, but it felt like a flashback to the mid-2000s Astros when it was Adam Everett, Brad Ausmus pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
It's like... You're looking at, like, there's three – you're giving away three innings. Like,
I remember those days.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You look at the lineup, it's like, okay, we're playing a six-inning game today.
Exactly.
It just –
100%.
It was such a defeating feeling when you look at the lineup and just realize, like – and with Brantley back, if you use Diaz and use Chaz correctly, those days should be over. But you know how – I mean, I think Dusty had a quote the other day. It's like, everyone's going to play on my team.
Oh,
like
I think it said yesterday.
Yeah, like it's some, like, you know, you like 8-year-old slow pitch team where, you know, you have to, like, the league requires you to play every kid because they don't want to hurt feelings. It's like, that seems to be the way Dusty's running his lineup.
Yeah, it literally felt like Dusty was, like, handing out participation
trophies. It did. It really felt like that.
I was like, I can't believe he just said – he says things that, like, I know he – regrets later.
Like, you're going to thank me for how I've
used it. I still can't believe he said that,
that
too. He's so annoyed with Chandler Rome. Like,
oh, yeah.
And McTaggart.
Speaking of a match we need at WrestleMania, we need Dusty versus Chandler Rome.
Yeah, give me a steel cage match. Like, let's
go. No. Hell in a cell.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, those two guys in a room together, like, just give me some chair shots from Dusty to Chandler Rome. Like, I'm all about. Dusty's so annoyed with the media. He just starts saying stuff like, when he said the you'll be thankful, I was like, no, I won't be.
And I know we'll get to break, especially since Josh, I don't think it's staying this wrestling talk anymore. But it's certainly, I've started to get the feeling recently, I don't know if you agree with this, especially with some of the things Dusty has said. Like, don't those feel like the comments of someone who knows he's not going to be here next year, so he doesn't care?
Yes.
Like he knows, like he's got senioritis. Like he doesn't care. He knows he's gone in 3 months and it doesn't matter.
And Dusty knows that if he is here next year, it's because he won another World Series
title.
And
then he would be bulletproof. It wouldn't matter. You could say whatever he wants.
Would you trade a World Series if you knew that Dusty Baker and Martin Maldonado would be gone for sure?
So I get a world. Wait,
you don't win a World Series.
No. I would take the World Series.
So you take the World Series, and Dusty and Maldy be back next season.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So would I.
Absolutely. I don't know why you
look,
would take.
Here's the thing with Dusty Baker. He's a content machine.
Oh yeah.
Like no. We're gonna
selfishly. I thank him
in sports radio. We're gonna miss Dusty Baker. Like yeah. I am gonna thank
like,
you, Dusty
like Phil
Baker.
Garner. Phil Garner was boring.
Yeah, like Dusty. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. We're gonna thank you because it gave us content. Like I appreciate it.
Like the Astros haven't been. Haven't had somebody that was willing to give you content like that since, like, maybe Jimmy Williams, like, with his manager's decisions and, like, how we could rail on those. All right, we got to get to break. When we get back here in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, we're going to talk about some of the Astros' recent performances and some of these pitchers. Do we have confidence in them? Do we not? That's next to the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Insert random audio clip. Now,
Mr. Campbell, send out the amendment is acceptable to the author. Is there objection to the opposite amendment? And the chair has done the amendment. Amendment is adopted.
This is the bullpen. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Brian McDonald, Joe George, and our man Josh behind the glass. If you want to give us a call on the HRMP listener line, get your thoughts in on the Astros or what we'll talk about in a few minutes with the Texans and their offensive line woes, give us a call on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. We were talking Astros last segment, Joe, and spent most of it on just kind of the train wreck that was last night between JV allowing four home runs and the lineup getting four hit. But I wanted to spend this segment mostly on some of the pitchers about where we are with our confidence level, because that's been a full season conversation ever since half the rotation went down in flames before the season even started. Well, I guess Luis Garcia was actually into the season, but close enough. It wasn't that far in. And so let's start with Fromber. Like Fromber, it's so weird. I think my size says it all with Fromber, because he obviously had the no-hitter, mm-hmm. I believe it was on August 1st, and then he had seven innings of no-hit ball, again, I believe it was against Detroit a few weeks later, mm-hmm. and he started that Red Sox game, the start after Detroit, with I believe five innings of no-hit ball, so it was like 14 straight innings of no-hit ball, but it's so funny because I was actually listening to the game coming in on the radio, and as soon as there was the Jeremy Pena error in the sixth inning, the broadcast immediately started talking about, I was like, well, let's hope Maldy can calm him down before a meltdown happens. Because it's so – I mean, that was really one of the things that people used to sell us on with Maldy, was that he was the guy that could calm Fromber down. Obviously, it didn't work. So he'd only allowed one hit and no walks. And no runs through five innings against the Red Sox on Wednesday. Then, flip of a switch, four hits, four runs in the sixth, and a lot of that coming after the Jeremy Pena error. And look, I've started to develop a theory, and I don't know if it's going to make you feel better or worse, because it feels like there's really not a fix for it. And so it's probably going to make you feel worse, and I apologize for that in advance. But remember last year in the World Series how, like, non-Astros baseball Twitter like started getting up in arms how they thought Fromber was like rubbing substances on his hands, and they started talking about it, that his routine where he would take his hat off and wipe his brow with sweat and then massage his palm. Well, that was Fromber's, I mean, like anyone would have like a cool down technique for him. Like if he's upset about not getting a ball strike call going his way, or about an error behind him, or even just tired and trying to take a little rest in between pitches, that was his routine. Like, he would step off the mound, take off the hat, wipe his brow, massage his hands, and then throw the next pitch. And it seemed to work for him. And it seemed to give him some consistency and avoid the mental breakdowns like we've seen, like we saw against Boston. But now with this pitch clock, obviously he's got 15 seconds in between pitches. He can no longer do that. Well, I guess first off, do you buy that might be part of the correlation of what's happening right now with Fromber and these inconsistencies and these meltdowns when one thing happens and it snowballs on him?
Oh, yeah. I'm all in on that theory. It does suck. But, like,
because there's no fix for that.
He is.
The pitch clock's not going away.
I don't know. Mentally weak sounds mean.
It does, but
like he's kind of true. Like, he's kind of a head case. Like we all know, Fromber is like we know. Like he's not like when things unravel, he falls apart. Like it is well documented, so clear. So like, yeah, I think like he'd always take these like these big, deep breaths.
Yes, yes.
And like it's like he would just like sit there. Like you could tell it's like he was like it reminds me of Anger Management. Is that the movie is with Adam Sandler?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like it would like remind me of that. Like he's doing that on the mound and like trying to like just like calm himself. And like that's gone now.
Yeah, so, I was like, going to make a Seinfeld reference, but I didn't want to be old. There's a George Costanza, not a George Costanza, his dad. He did the 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. I'm like a mixed bag on Seinfeld. I haven't watched all the way through, but really? I know so many of the references.
See, I didn't know where the age, because even for me, that was, I didn't really watch it when it came on.
Yeah.
Because I was a teenager when it ended. But I've rewatched it since. It's been on every platform at some point, Netflix, Hulu, wherever.
It's on my to-do list.
Okay.
It was supposed to be one of my pandemic watches.
I know The Office is your number one show, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So you're gonna get to Seinfeld, though, at some point?
I will at some point, yeah.
Okay.
I'll find time eventually. But I think it's really fair.
How does Fromber get away?
Doesn't.
I was about to ask you the impossible question. How does Fromber fix this?
A therapist? Like, I don't really know what else the other answer is because if Maldi can't calm him down.
And he can't take the time off the mound.
Like, it's like, he has to, like, figure out a way mentally to, like, take a deep breath in 15 seconds and, like, get his mind right that, like, when one thing goes wrong, like, he doesn't completely unravel. Because, like if we're going to do, like, you know, like, a confidence meter, like, 1 to 10, I'm still, like, an 8 with Fromber. It's just, I think part of it is Dusty needs a quicker hook. Like, it's
yeah,
like
if you can see the meltdown. I mean, yeah. I said, the broadcast saw the meltdown come. It's like, oh, well, here's the Pena error. This could be an unraveling point.
Exactly. So it's like, that's like, I'm still like an 8 out of 10 confidence in Fromber. I just need Dusty to be a better manager and know his guy and say, like, look, if we all can see the meltdown, you know the meltdown's happening. And like, if you got to get someone up in the bullpen quick and make a change.
All right, so going from one guy who has been inconsistent to one guy who's been very consistent because he's been consistently bad, Christian Javier, it's going to be a lot of unpretty numbers here, Joe. So Javier dropped his ERA down to 290. Remember those days?
Oh.
290, Javier. Man, that was great. So he dropped it down to 290 on June 15th. Since then, Javier has a 746 ERA over 11 starts. With 32 walks over 50 innings. I mean, just the – you wouldn't even have to tell me the ERA number if you just tell me those walks. It's just – of course he's going to suck if you're walking 32 guys over 50 innings. So I don't know if you'll go with – you went with me on my Fromber explanation. I don't know if you'll go with me and part of this kind of went out the window because the Astros didn't get some of the waiver claims that I was hoping they would get, so they might not have this luxury. But I've reached the point now with Javier where I'm so convinced it's not going to change. I'm just okay with shutting him down for the season.
Yeah, I mean, is
shutting him down for the season worse, or is throwing him out there when you know he's going to give up 4 runs and barely get through 5 in 100 pitches worse?
I think the shutdown would make a lot of sense. Like, I think a 15-day IL stint for Javier.
At least. Start like, there and then.
Yeah, like and just see what happens. It was interesting. You know, TK was on with us yesterday. With the Killer Bees
3-6.
He said that it was like the breaking point. I think was the words he used.
His last start?
No, this next start.
Oh, this next start. Okay.
So tomorrow night for Javier, where it's like if it doesn't go well, like that's probably when he makes the move to the bullpen, and Urquidy comes back into the rotation.
Man, I don't.
And like I don't love that.
That
either.
Doesn't fix anything because no, like when Javier, I mean, not that he's. Not that he's Cy Young Award winner in the third inning, but his worst spot is always that first time through the lineup before he settles in. And then sometimes he does settle in and gets a little bit better until the pitch count catches up with him. But, like, I would worry about a bullpen roll because we've seen in these games, even where he'll finish the game, you know, 5 innings, 3 earned runs, and all 3 runs came in the first.
Exactly. Like he's bad in the first. Because there's two things with Javier. The first thing is, like, I talked about this a lot with a guy I used to work with. You know, Javier has 2 pitches. And like we were opposites of the debate. I was like, Javier can be a Cy Young winner, and this guy was saying, no, he can't. He only has 2 pitches. And last year, I looked right. This year, he looks right because when the fastball doesn't work, he's got nothing. And then if you guys go to @JeremyBranham on Twitter, I'm gonna show BMAC some photos. Scroll to the right. Now look at his stomach. He got fat.
That could be the angle, but
it could
I see,
be.
I,
but like you but see, it, like a little certain, pudge coming yeah, over the belt.
Look,
like
I don't think I'm the person that could fat shame anybody.
Why? We're fat. We can fat shame people. We are
well,
the ones
exactly
that can.
Why. That's exactly why.
If we're fat, you can fat shame. It's like if you're dumb, you can dumb shame. But like I Jeremy and I are on this side. We're like he looks a little chunky, and like if he's you know a little chunky with the pitch clock, like Alec Manoah, Lance Lynn, like he's not big like those dudes.
No,
like,
Manoah's huge.
But like it's like you know the pitch clock. The fastball's not there. He's been overworked.
And I think that's what it is. Like, he pitched his regular season total, not even including the postseason last year. His regular season innings total last year was 47 innings more than he'd ever pitched before. And people always talk about, like, 50 innings. You exceed that, and of course he did with the postseason. You exceed that innings limit by more than 50, and you're really in trouble. You throw that into the WBC.
I can't believe that.
A shortened off season. You're messing with his routine getting ready in spring training because of the WBC. And I really think it's mechanics because, I mean, not only could mechanics get some of that velocity back, but more importantly, I think his mechanics is why that fastball was quote-unquote invisible last postseason because people just weren't picking it up. But if your mechanics break down and it's slower, I mean, you're just throwing BP up there.
I'm at the point where, like, Christian Javier.
That's why I want to shut him down. Yeah. Like, he's not going to fix this without rest.
He's not in my playoff rotation. He's not on my playoff roster at this point.
Yeah, no, for sure on the first one. Second one, I guess I'd have to see how Hunter Brown and Urquidy finish the season.
Yeah.
But I'm probably with you that he wouldn't even be postseason roster.
Maybe he's on the roster for the ALCS and the World Series, but he's Jose Urquidy, who pitched in one game, and the only game he pitched in was when Justin Verlander got lit up.
Like, yeah.
To me, Urquidy, after his last performance, and he's going to probably do the same thing on Sunday when Javier stinks, he's going to come in, try to get you 3 or 4 innings out of the bullpen. Like, Javier is, like, it's insane. The guy who was so dominant last year, part of 2 no-hitters, 1 in the World Series, is this guy. Like, he's broken.
How do you feel about that contract right now?
I think it'll be okay.
I mean, it was compared to what the market value for a guy that did what he did.
It was
a team-friendly deal, but
I still believe in Christian Javier. I just think.
So
he's
you think
a really
a,
bad
you
season.
Think a full offseason, no WBC, he gets back to what he was?
Yeah, and I think shutting him down and him not being on the playoff roster and not adding those innings would be good for him.
I do too. All right, we got to get out of here. And next segment, we're going to get on this Texans offensive line. It feels like every day we're getting a report about some new starter here, somebody else leaving the rotation between Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs. It's been kind of a mess with this Texans offensive line. Will it be as bad as 2017 when Deshaun Watson was under pressure constantly? Joe and I will discuss that next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Is it football season yet?
The men who play it are the best there are. Disciplined professionals who perform on a stage 100 yards long.
This is the Bullpen. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the Bullpen with myself, Brian McDonald, found on the Twitter or on the X, depending on what you want to call it, at Sack by BMAC. My co-host today, not Sean, not Andrew, they'll be back next week. Joe George can be found on the X at Joe George Radio and our man Josh behind the glass at IMJ Chevy. And Joe, we're going to get into the Texans here in a second, but I think the biggest story going on right now in sports is Coach Prime is in his first game, and it looks like they're going to go into halftime at worst tied here. TCU's about to kick an extra point to make it 14-14. There's just under 2 minutes left in the game, and they did make it 14-14.
Yeah,
or 2 minutes left in the first half, that is. So
Shedeur Sanders, Deion's kid, looks really good.
That first drive they had was really impressive.
Travis Hunter, who was the number one DB going into his freshman year when he committed to Jackson State last year, he's now a wide receiver for Colorado. He's been dominating. Like, he looks like an elite player. Like, Deion's got some real talent. I know TCU lost like half their players from their, you know, their college football playoff team last year to the NFL.
Quarterback,
like quarterback, running back, like lost so many, wide receiver, like lost so many guys. But like, they're ranked and Colorado's hanging tough. Like, tie game at halftime, this is a good start for Deion. Like, this is gonna, I mean, look, Michael Irvin's on the sideline.
Yeah.
Deion Sanders is gonna be the biggest story in college football this year. If they win some games, like that place, I mean, the spring game, like they sold out. Colorado. It was like the whole stadium was in black t-shirts. Like it was a stadium.
That's cool.
They showed like a game versus like a top 25 opponent last year, and the stadium was 20% full. Their spring game was 100% capacity. Like prime time is just like look big noon Saturday next week. Nebraska, Colorado.
They could beat Nebraska.
Nebraska sucked. The other night.
They could beat Nebraska if Colorado plays an equal level of what we've seen so far in this first half against TCU. They could certainly beat Nebraska.
Yeah.
And what you mentioned there with Coach Prime and Michael Irvin's on the sidelines and the excitement there with the spring game and everyone in black. That's half the battle in college football. I mean, if you're Prime, you've already got an edge on every college football coach that will step into a recruit's living room. Because that recruit already knows who you are. The parents know who you are.
Yeah.
And the excitement and the hype is half the battle. Like, this thing could turn – I mean, we saw on the broadcast before the game started, they mentioned that they had 68 new players on the team.
Yeah.
Or only three returning starters. So this already turning over quickly. You get the hype behind you. You land a decent class. I mean, they're obviously not going to land like a top five class, probably not even top 10. But you get a respectable class there, and you get some talent behind everything else. I mean, this team could turn around in a hurry.
I'm almost curious.
Especially in a week in Big 12 with Oklahoma and Texas leaving.
Yeah, I'm almost curious just like how long Prime's going to be at Colorado.
That's a good question. Like, I mean, their over-under this year is, what, 3.5?
Yeah.
Let's go crazy here. Let's say they double. They win 7 games.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't a team – like, let's say Michigan fires Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh's on the way out. If you're Michigan, would you call Prime?
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course you would. Like, everybody would.
I still think, like, the end of the day, like, he's waiting for, Mike Norvell to get fired, even though I really like Florida State this year. But, like, I think he's going to kind of wait for the Florida State job to open up. Or something big like that. But
or at least in the state of Florida.
Yeah, like, he's going to get a big job soon, like bigger, way bigger than Colorado. And the thing is, like, he's made Colorado big and important.
Like, let's go for the like just the craziest switch between coaches ever. Let's say Nick Saban retires, Coach Prime for Alabama. That's what I want to see.
Hell yeah,
that's what I want to see. All right, we'll have to cut off the conversation there because we need to get into this Texans offensive line. Man, Joe, for a position group that was invested in as heavily as the Texans invested in an offensive line, it's a really sucky feeling that we even have to have the conversation about just how good their offensive line is going to be. I mean, obviously, you pay Laramie Tunsil record money. You give Titus. I know you, Joe, and Joel have talked about this on the Killer Bees 3-6 here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But you give Titus Howard, I believe it was top three or top five money at right tackle. You trade for Shaq Mason, and you give him a new contract. You spend a second-round pick on Juice Scruggs. Spend a first-round pick on Kenyon Green. I mean, they are more heavily invested in their offensive line than probably any team in the league, and yet we're talking here on September 2nd about are they going to be able to keep their, quarterback, their rookie quarterback, second overall pick C.J. Stroud even upright? We saw what happened in that Patriots game when they didn't have their guys out there, and it was ugly. Stroud got pressured on 60% of his dropbacks, and Tunsil wasn't in that game, so that obviously changes some things. But I'm starting to have some real concern about this Texans offensive line.
I think it's fair. This team is like they built this team like. That's supposed to be one of the strengths of the Texans, all 22, like offense and defense, was going to be the offensive line. And like Kenyon Green, this whole situation is so bizarre. Like he could have had the surgery in May, but then like they tried to play through it and it only got worse. He clearly got hurt on that Saints play. Like he went super viral for it. Now it feels like it's almost mean with how viral he went because like he holds his arm after he gets just gets embarrassed on the field. Like it's not good. Juice Scruggs is out. Jared Patterson, like, he's a fine player.
He's a rookie.
Like, exactly. Like,
he's a rookie.
He's a rookie. And then, like, I even saw people, like, making a big deal. I don't even know this kid's name. But, like, they claimed offensive lineman.
Kendrick Green. Well, Kendrick Green was a trade.
Yeah, so they traded for Kendrick Green. They traded for Josh Jones. They traded for – they signed George Fant. And then they signed
– Breaker.
Brent Breaker. And, like, people were, like, all excited. They're like, all SEC, Ole Miss. Dude, he got drafted in the 7th round this year and got cut. And now he's on your team. Like, I don't care who's all SEC at Ole Miss and give it 3 sacks in college. He was a 7th-round pick, and he's on his second team already. Like, the offensive line, it's hope and pray, and it's hope that Titus gets back week 2.
That's a big concern because Baltimore was 5th last year in sacks. So I know there's, and it was weird. Like, so I was looking up the Ravens pass rush numbers. They were fifth in sacks, but then 28th and 25th in QB knockdown and QB pressure percentage. So that's a weird separation, how they would be so high in sacks, but just weren't doing anything else outside the sacks.
It was, here comes Jadeveon Clowney.
Here comes Jadeveon Clowney. So it's a weird thing, because, I mean, going into that, like, you're talking about, like, you could potentially be starting Jarrett Patterson, a rookie, I guess center or left guard, and then the other spot between left guard and center, could, at least right now the depth chart that I've seen has Kendrick Green in there. And you mentioned someone, what was it, Breaker, Brent, who Brent was Breaker, a seventh-round pick who was cut. I mean, Kendrick Green was a third-round pick 2 years ago in 2021, played 15 games at center in his rookie year, didn't play at all last year, and now the Steelers are just willing to let him go for a sixth.
He's not good.
And that's not because he's playing well.
Yeah.
And like, now you're starting, like, and we're going to get to some, probably in the next segment, we're going to get to some audio from DJ Bieniemy, who you can hear on the station several times each week on 97.5 and 92.5, on reasons why he's not concerned. But, like, it's more than just not having Pro Bowlers at the other two spots that aren't occupied by Shaq, Titus, and Laramie. It's not just that you're not having Pro Bowlers at those two spots. You have guys that arguably shouldn't be on the team starting.
Yeah, and like even like when Drew Scrugg comes back week four or week five, you know, I never liked the idea of going into the season with a rookie center. Like, I didn't like that. Like,
no.
I think my hope would have been that they would have brought in another center, and then Scruggs would have battled with Kenyon Green for the left guard spot.
And I think that
was
the original idea with Questenberry, but he got hurt.
Yeah, and exactly. And that, look, injuries happen, but like, the Texans have lost Questenberry, Scruggs, Kenyon Green, Titus Howard. They've lost four guys of what was likely going to be like a six-man battle for four spots. Like, besides Tunsil, he's the only one that had a guaranteed spot. I guess Howard too, but I'm not even sure, dude. I think there's a chance that Titus doesn't play right tackle week two.
Okay, let's save that for the other side. We got to get more into this Texans offensive line situation, comparing it to 2017, and how real is the concern. DJ Bieniemy doesn't seem to think there is as much concern. He, of course, the beat writer for the Texans for ESPN. You can hear him on this station multiple times a week on 97.5 and 92.5. So we'll get to his comments on why he's not concerned and some of my and Joe's comparisons to 2017, which might give you reason for concern. That's next on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
You was a toilet baby. Tip just plopped down like a little old turd, just right down in a bowl.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. George, myself, Ryan McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. Don't forget, coming up next segment at 1 o'clock, our man Josh Beard, who can be found on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio, the new 12-3 host, Josh in the Who. He will join us to talk fantasy football. We haven't got to talk a lot of fantasy football on this show, but a little peek behind the curtain with Joe, me, and Josh. We have 3/4 of a show that we did at the Texans flagship back in 2018.
Fact.
Which is so long ago now.
So long.
So with that combination, we had to have a little mini reunion of the Fantasy Four. Shout out to our guy, Kyle King, who will not be on with us today. But we'll have that conversation, talk fantasy football with Josh Beard at 1 o'clock. And then, of course, at 1:30, the groundbreaking segment, Mount Rushmore Plus One, comes back with Joe George making his debut on that as well. If you have any thoughts on what we're talking about with the Texans offensive line, and we're going to continue that conversation now, give us a call on the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776. So, Joe, I talked about it going into break just then. We have some audio from DJ Bieniemy's appearance on your show, The Killer Bees, with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, along with you, of course, on why he is not worried about the Texans offensive line this year. Let's hear what DJ Bieniemy had to say.
Hey, if you have Titus, you got Shaq, you got Laramie Tunsil, you just have to have replacement level players at center and left guard, and you'll be just fine. No team in the entire NFL has 5 good to great offensive linemen, unless you're the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. So So the two teams, everybody else that have considerably good offensive lines, have at least two to three really good to great guys, then they just have guys fill in. Because if you have Laramie, you have Titus, you have Shaq, those three guys should elevate the play of whoever fills in for Juice and whoever fills in for King and Green. Like, when I was thinking that they could be a top 10 unit, it was because of those three, not because of Juice and not because of King.
Like, I get where DJ is going there. And again, thanks to DJ Bienemy, the ESPN beat reporter for the Houston Texans. You can hear on this station multiple times a week. I get where DJ was going there. And because certainly with players the caliber of Shaq Mason and Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard, they can elevate players around them. I totally agree with that. But there's a limit to that, right? Like, they can take guys that are maybe, you know, just below the Pro Bowl level or maybe just like average starters and elevate them. But there's a tipping point at some point. Now, we're talking about guys, a rookie Jarrett Patterson and Kendrick Green, a third round pick 2 years ago that the Steelers gave up for a sixth. These are not the caliber players to me, Joe, that even as good as Laramie Tunsil is, that he could elevate to this level that's acceptable.
I think I also would just feel better and more in line. Like I also agree. I get where DJ is coming from. And I think in principle, he's totally right. Like, if the Texans are great offensively on the offensive line, it's because of those three guys. But you're also getting, like, above average or just mediocre play from Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs. Like, I don't think you're going to get that from these other guys at this point in the season. And it's also, you're staring right down the middle of the field, like, with your center and your left guard. So it's not like if it was a left guard and a right guard or a left guard and a right tackle.
Right.
Like, I might
the
feel
right
differently.
Next to each other.
Like, it's literally like the middle of your offensive line. Like, if they played the Rams this year, Aaron Donald would cook them for dinner.
I don't know if you've heard this, Joe, but interior pass rush is really hard for a quarterback to deal with.
Exactly. And, like, so it's going to be tough for CJ. This is going to be – CJ is already shown in that first preseason game. He got more pressure in that first preseason game in two series than he probably ever had in college football, except when he played versus Georgia and Michigan. Like, he's playing Northwestern, Rutgers. Like, that to
Indiana,
me
Illinois.
Like, that's the difference. Where, like, he's playing, like, he's going to get pressured in a way that, like, he just hasn't. And, you know, he has to get rid of the ball quicker and not be Deshaun Watson, who just holds onto the ball way too long. Like, CJ cannot be that guy.
Absolutely. Look, and it's, I mean, not only can they, look, I think, again, like I said before in this conversation, like, I think there's a limit to what they can elevate. But it's different, as you mentioned. Like, if they were spread out, let's say it's left guard and right guard, and then you've got, you know, basically Pro Bowlers at, you know, the two tackle spots in the center. So there's players on either side of them that can help. Now they're right next to each other, so that doesn't really apply. And I look back to probably the best offensive line that the Texans ever had, which was 2011, when you have Eric Winston and Dwayne Brown at your tackles. You got Wade Smith and Mike Brazel at your guards, and you have Chris Myers, the Miami product, at center. Look, Mike Brazel and Chris Myers were good players, but they were kind of journeyman offensive linemen. They weren't Pro Bowlers. They weren't the player that Wade Smith or Eric Winston were. And they did, I think, you know, as DJ Bienemy pointed out, Dwayne Brown, I do believe, lifted up the level of those other players around them. But you have to have a certain level of talent to be able to be lifted up. Like, Michael Jordan is lifting up, you know, Kerr and Pippen and these other guys. He's not going to be able to lift up, you know, some scrubs off the street.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the breaking point. And this takes me to kind of where I wanted to go with this conversation, kind of a comparison to 2017. You mentioned it with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson in 2017, his rookie season, was under fire that year. That offensive line was a mess. The Texans ranked 31st in sack percentage in 2017, only better than the Colts. And you look at some of the guys that were starting for that team, and there's a lot of, I think, comparisons to this year, especially at guard, where the Texans were starting 98% of the time Xavier Suofilo at one of the guard spots, who was a highly drafted guard. He was a second-round pick, not a first-round pick like Kenyon Green. But Suofilo was also in that draft when he was taken out of UCLA, seen as, like, there's our guy, 8 years. He's a rock. He'll be perfect. And, it fell apart quickly. So there's a lot of comparisons there with Kenyon Green. And you look at some of the other guys receiving snaps. And we got Breno Giacomini, who I know our former coworker Seth Payne just railed about for years, just the fake tough guy that Breno Giacomini was. And there's names on there like Chris Clark and Jeff Allen.
So bad.
Greg Mance. I mean, and that's kind of where, like, when I name off those guys like Breno Giacomini and Jeff Allen and Greg Mance, that kind of feels like Kendrick Green and Jarrett Patterson. So, look, I mean, Deshaun Watson was a special talent, and the Texans' offense before he tore his ACL in November was still really good. But you mentioned it. Like, Deshaun Watson held the ball. If C.J. Stroud's a rookie, he might not be able to get the ball rid of the ball super quickly. And if you take that and combine it with an interior offensive line with two scrubs starting in front of him that are going to let guys by him, we could have a disaster scenario.
Definitely. And, like, and if your center and your left guard can't run block as well, then, like, your Dameon Pierce advantage kind of goes out the window too. So it's like I expect this first game to be very ugly. There's a reason why they're the only double digit dog in week one.
What is the line?
Last I saw it was at 10.5.
10.5, wow.
So like they're the only team in the NFL that's like underdogs by 10 points or more. And I think that's gonna look, you know, that's gonna be reflective of this game. Like, I think you're gonna hope for moments and just kinda hope you can get out healthy. But CJ is gonna have a very rude welcome to the NFL moment. Especially also because, dude, I think their best wide receiver is going to be on the sideline most of the game. Like, where they're at right now with Tank Dell, I don't agree with. Like, it seems very clear that Robert Woods, Noah Brown are ahead of Tank Dell on the depth chart. And, like, that makes no sense to me because he's
better. Is that a Dusty Maldy moment?
I don't know what the deal is with this Tank Dell stuff. Because, like, I don't know how you watch him in the preseason and say he's not
the best. He was great in that Patriots game.
How he's not the best wide receiver on this team.
And that, like, you bring up a good point with the wide receivers, and it just adds to this perfect storm scenario that could lead to some really really bad times for C.J. Stroud. I mean, he's a rookie, so it's going to take him longer to process. You got two inexperienced guys at left guard and center that are going to let pressure right in his face. And then you add to that, you know, the ghost of Bobby Trees, you know, 30-year-old Robert Woods out there who's not going to be running super fast routes. You got Noah Brown. You got, you know, whoever else you want to throw out there, Nico Collins. These aren't, you know, this isn't the Bengals wide receiving core. This isn't the Vikings wide receiving core. So you have to worry, not only is C.J. Stroud making decisions slower, not only is he going to have pressure in his face, but he's got wide receivers who probably aren't going to be the quickest in the league at getting open early. So you combine all that together, and it's a perfect bleep storm that could, look, I don't want to be doom and gloom because, I mean, I'm excited about C.J. Stroud, and I'm excited about D'Amico, and I like a lot of the changes they made. But unfortunately, because of these injuries and their own just malfeasance when it came to Kenyon Green and managing his injury, I mean, there could be a really perfect storm here that could create, like, I don't want to say David Carr because that's like the worst case scenario, but it could create some development issues for C.J. Stroud if he's getting hammered.
I'll tell you what, I'm way more excited for week two when they're at home versus the Colts than I am week one.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I really don't think, like, we're going to all come in that next Monday after the Ravens game. I think it's going to be like a massive overreaction.
Oh, the overreaction, like, on the Monday after the Ravens game is going to be crazy.
Like, based on what we see with people, the way they talk about Jeremy Pena, I don't think the city is ready for a franchise quarterback and, like, the ebbs and flows that you're going to see with it. Like, it's going to be so out of control both ways. So, like, it's funny, like, just like that first Monday is going to be such a nightmare, like, on these shows because everyone's going to be so upset. Everyone's going to be, he's a bust. He's not good. D'Amico can't coach. Like, I can hear the calls coming through. Like, I'm just, like, ready for all of them. And the following week should be much better when they beat the Colts in week two.
Maybe, look, a little peek behind the curtain. Maybe we just X out the phone lines that Monday after the Ravens game and not open them up until the Colts game the week after.
I'm not opposed.
I'm not saying we would do that. We always want to hear from the listeners of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But, yeah, text into that same number. If you do want to text in and share your thoughts, you can reach us on the HRMP listener line. We will not X out the phone lines right now. That is 713-780-3776 to reach us, either text or over the phone. We got to get to break now because our man Josh Beard, the host of the Noon to 3 show, Josh in the Who, he will join us next. Joe George, Brian McDonald, he'll join us to talk some fantasy football next on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pitter patter.
It's a hard life picking stones and pulling teats, but sure as God's got sandals, it beats fighting dudes with treasure trails.